Genesis chapter 45. On Wednesdays, especially for our visitors, and of course just to remind our members, we are also going through the book of James. And you don't want to miss any of those. We're still in James chapter 1. We've only about four messages into that series right now. And you'll certainly want to be here for that. That'll be a help in your life. So I hope you plan to attend that. This Wednesday we will have a missionary. You want to be here for that. Of course, Brother Jonathan Skeen going to Russia. And there's actually even connections there with the Jordans. I know the Jordans know of the wife's family, I believe. But Genesis chapter 45, I'm going to read a couple of verses here. And then I'm going to jump over to verse 50 and just read one or two verses in chapter 50. All right, so Genesis chapter 45. And I'm going to start there in... I'll start in verse 5, and then I'm going to give the setting of Joseph's life after this. So I'm sort of picking things up in the middle of a story, but I'll lay that out by my introduction as to what's taking place. But Genesis chapter 45, starting in verse 5. "Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." Chapter 50. Let's go over to chapter 50. We'll start in verse 19. In chapter 45, he was speaking to his brethren. And in chapter 50, Joseph is also speaking to his brothers. And he says this to him in chapter 50. "And Joseph said unto them, Fear not. For am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive." Let's go ahead and pray. Father in heaven, Lord, I love you. Lord, I ask your blessing upon the service. I pray that you be glorified and honored in all that is said and done. Lord, I pray that your word would go forth, that it would be clear, that it would be that I would stay faithful to your word, and that the truth that we're going to be looking at today, Lord, I pray that you use it to draw us closer to you, to change our lives. And Lord, I pray if there's anyone here who does not know Jesus Christ as Savior, Lord, I certainly pray for their salvation this morning, that even this morning they would come and put their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. Lord, please bless now. May you be glorified and honored. Lord, I love you, and I pray this in Christ's name. Amen. Now, we're going to be dealing with an area here that is just such an important one in the Christian life to be successful at it, to be able to stay in the will of God. It's an area that all of us tend to struggle with, and that is forgiveness. Forgiveness. It's much easier for us to hold on to the wrong that others have done unto us or are doing unto us. And yet, if you're going to be successful in the Christian life and stay right with God and have that walk with Him, forgiveness is essential. And in the life of Joseph, what I want us to see here is I believe we have the true key to forgiveness of how that takes place. And so, by way of background, we have to see what was going on in the life of Joseph to understand how he was able to get to a place of forgiveness in his life. So now let's back up here. We go all the way back to Jacob, his father, who his name was changed to Israel. He was the son of Isaac. Jacob had a twin brother named Esau. And of course, if you're familiar with the book of Genesis, his twin brother was born first. It was Esau who was the firstborn. It was not Jacob. And Jacob actually sort of tricked, if you will, he sort of deceived his brother out of the birthright. That might be a little, I'd like to go over that event just to talk about that. We don't have time for that right now. But what he did was basically, Esau came in from the field. He had been hunting all day. He got nothing. He was hungry. And Esau, or Jacob, is there with basically making chili, what we would call today chili. That's what he's making right there. And Esau sees that. He says, "Oh, man, that smells so good. I am starving. Please, can I have some?" And Jacob says, "Sure, but I want the birthright. You sell me your birthright for this, and I'll give it to you." And Esau was just thinking of the here and now. He wasn't thinking of his future. And it's a great example of how people can trade their future for just a couple of minutes. For just a couple of minutes of pleasure, it was over with. And he traded his entire future. Not only his future, he also traded his children's future. you understand it should have been the children of Esau, not the children of Israel? The birthright was to Esau. So he sold it, and he said, yeah, man, I'll do it. What good is it going to do me? And so, you think about that. 5 minutes later, the chili is gone, and so is his birthright. Well, obviously, that soured the relationship very quickly between Jacob and Esau. When Jacob now had the birthright, Esau saw that. You know, he had regret, he had remorse, there was division, there was strife. And Jacob gets out of Dodge. Jacob heads out. Jacob decides, I'm heading out of Dodge. And Jacob heads to Laban's house in Haran, where it was family lying there. And that's where he finds Rachel. And he falls in love with a woman named Rachel, and he wants to marry her. We all know the story of the working for the 7 years, and then he was tricked by his father-in-law, because at the wedding ceremony, he switched daughters on him. He put in the firstborn, which was Leah, instead of Rachel. But the one that he loved was Rachel. Now, all that comes into play here with what takes place with Joseph. Okay? The wife that he loved was Rachel. And so, but he marries Leah, and he worked another 7 years, and then he marries Rachel at that time. Now, how Jacob ended up treating Leah and Rachel was different. The Lord was not pleased with that. So he actually closed the womb of Rachel, and he opened the womb of Leah. So only Leah was able to have children. Well, Rachel saw this, and she was distraught, and they begin to make wrong decisions, really. She actually gives to Jacob a handmaiden. She's basically going to be the surrogate mom here. The children would be Rachel's, but she's using the handmaiden to provide her children. Leah does the same thing then. Leah ends up doing the same thing with the handmaiden. And anyhow, Jacob gets some things right there, and the Lord opens the womb of Rachel. And the firstborn of the wife that he loved was Joseph. It's the firstborn. She only had two children. The next one would have been Benjamin. And of course, we know that she had died during that delivery when she delivered Benjamin. And so Joseph is born, and he was the oldest child of the wife that he loved. So now let's fast forward now to Genesis chapter 37. Now the Bible gives a significant portion to the life, to the life of Joseph, almost more than any other man in the Bible. From Genesis chapter 37 through chapter 50, with the exception of chapter 38, it's all about Joseph. The Lord devotes a lot of time to him in the Word of God. He really was an amazing man. When we pick up with his life, the Lord starts off in chapter 37. He is 17 years old. He gives us his age. He's 17 years old, and you can see that the father, Jacob, had showed favoritism unto Joseph. That's certainly, it's never right to show favoritism between your children. That's always going to lead to division. That's always going to lead to strife. But he was doing it. And in chapter 37, he has the coat of many colors that his father had made for him. Now, that coat is fairly significant, not just because of the favoritism aspect. There's much more to that coat than what we realize. That coat spoke of Jacob's authority and his leadership, even over his brothers. It was a significant garment that his dad gave him. So he's in a leadership position at 17, and he's almost the youngest of all the brothers. Well, that was hard for the brothers to swallow, from Simeon and Judah and Reuben, and they're like, man. And so he was given a responsibility by his dad. We like to think that Jacob, many times how it's preached, and I think it's very improper and a disservice to Joseph, that he was this runaround tattletale. You don't understand. He was given a position by his dad. A responsibility. It was his work, what he was doing. And something took place that was major that he said, I got to let dad know. Well, between that event, when he goes and lets him know what was taking place, the fact that he had the coat, the fact that he's in a leadership position, in chapter 37, three times it mentions that his brothers hated him. They despised him for the position that he was in. Two times it uses the word hatred, and one time it uses the word envious in chapter 37. So as you're going through there, they had traveled south, looking after some of their livestock, and on a certain day, the father, Jacob, sends him to go check on his brothers. That was his responsibility. He's basically the overseer, if you will, at 17 years old. And so he heads out. He's trying to locate them. They traveled even further south than what he thought. And so anyhow, he finally comes up to see his brother, and they see him coming, and they decide they want to kill him. They want to kill him. They're going to take him out. They're devising this plot, and of course, Reuben saves his life. Reuben intercedes, says, listen, we can't kill the kid. We can't do it. we're going to do something here, but we can't kill him. And so as soon as he comes, they rip that coat off of him. They throw him in a pit. Now, remember, we know from later on, okay, when he's in the pit, we know this when they first appear to Joseph when he's in Egypt, that while Joseph's in the pit, they're sitting down basically eating lunch, and Joseph is begging for his life. His brothers are sitting down eating lunch. Reuben had actually left. He's not present when this is taking place. He was there for the initial start. Let's just get him in the pit and go from there. We don't know what Reuben was doing, but the Bible mentions that he was no longer present. And so they're deciding what to do, and they're really getting ready to go ahead and kill him anyhow. Reuben's gone. All right, but all of a sudden, the slave trader's coming by. One of the Midianites, Ishmael, that line tied together there. And so they agreed, let's just sell him. I think it was, I'm trying to remember who spoke up. It was Judah, I believe, that spoke up at that time, to sell him unto them. And so they agreed to do that. Let's just sell him. So they sell their brother as a slave. He's sold. And, of course, they go back to Dad. They let Dad know that he was killed by a wild animal and just completely lie unto the Dad. And Jacob is just crushed. He was crushed. As you're going to see, even years later, we're going to deal with about a 22-year time frame right now. Dad never got over the death of Joseph, what he thought. He thought Joseph was dead. So Joseph gets sold as a slave. And Joseph, as it just so happens that this man that he was sold to happens to head to Egypt. Now remember, God is in control of all of this, and Joseph knows it. He knows it. He heads to Egypt, and there just happens to be one of the key men in Pharaoh's army that happens to need a slave. And this guy just happens to have one, and it's Joseph. So Joseph, as soon as they arrive in Egypt, he is sold into Potiphar's house. And immediately, Potiphar, just like Jacob, recognized the leadership ability of this young man. And he puts him in charge over all of his house. The wisdom and leadership that Joseph had was God-given here. It was recognized immediately everywhere he went in his life. And so he is placed in charge over the household. He's placed in charge over the household, and all of a sudden, he gets falsely charged of rape. The man's wife accuses him of rape when it's just the opposite. He was running away from the situation. And he's thrown into prison, unjustly, for a crime he never committed. He's been sold as a slave. His brothers hate him. Think what it was like trying, Joseph, to try and lead his brothers at 17 when they hated him. Do you think they fought every decision he made? Absolutely. We know they mocked him. I mean, think what the guy went through. They hated him. He would have been isolated with perhaps the exception, of course, of Benjamin, his true brother. He'd have been hated. He would not have been invited around the family table with the brothers when Dad wasn't present. And so they want to kill him. He knows that. He's begging for his life. He can hear them plotting to kill him. Then he's sold as a slave. He gets sold in the Potiphar's house. And, oh, I left off a key ingredient of all this, didn't I, in chapter 37. I left off the dreams. When Joseph had the dreams of his family bowing down before him, that somehow he's in this incredible leadership position. Mom, Dad, and everybody bows before him. Even Jacob was stunned at those dreams. But what Joseph knew was those dreams were God-given. They were God-given. He's sitting in prison for a crime he did not commit. He'd been sold as a slave by brothers who hated it and wanted to kill him. And yet, so far, there is not an ounce of bitterness in him. There is not an ounce of, woe is me. Why is this happening to me? And this is key to forgiveness. This is key to forgiveness. Okay? He's sitting in prison. And happens to be because of whose house he was in, it wasn't a coincidence, he gets thrown into the prison that really belonged to, there's different, just like we have different jails and prisons here, they did in Egypt as well. He is in the prison that the Pharaoh himself would use. So while he's there, the cook and the butler get thrown into jail as well. there was some type of assassination plot going against Pharaoh, and one of those two men was responsible for it. Well, they have dreams while they're in prison, and Joseph hears about it. They go to Joseph. By the way, in prison, by the way, as soon as he got to prison, he's not there long at all. We don't know. We know the time frame between when he was 17, when he was sold as a slave, to what age he was when he's standing before Pharaoh. That's a 13-year time frame. And we know he spent at least several of those years in prison. We're just not sure what the balance was between in Potiphar's house and in prison. More than likely, it would have been much more time in prison than in Potiphar's house, but we're not certain. But anyhow, when he's in prison, the head of the prison recognizes the leadership that Joseph has. Everywhere he went in his life, they recognized the leadership ability that he had. And he puts him in charge of everything. It's in your hand. And it makes a point to even point out, he didn't even question Joseph. The guy could lead. It was God-given. So anyhow, they have their dreams, and Joseph said, you know, the Lord will reveal that unto me. And he let him know what was going to happen. He let him know that the butler was going to be restored and that the baker was going to be executed. 3 days later, it's exactly what happened. The cook is executed and the butler is restored. And Joseph told the butler, listen, when you head before Pharaoh, please, I want you to remember me. I am in here for a crime I did not commit. But the butler forgets about Joseph, but that's all of God. It's all of God. Nor do you see Joseph yet getting bitter or angry. It's not taking place. You see, he had direction from God as to God's will. All right? He had dreams from God that's keeping him on target. He doesn't understand what's taking place, but he's trusting that God is in control. So, 2 more years go by. He's sitting in prison for 2 more years, and Pharaoh has not just dreams, he has nightmares. The wording that's used there, it terrified Pharaoh what he saw. The first dream that he had dealt with cattle. And he had 7 fat, very healthy come up, and then right behind them was 7 disgusting, vile-looking, wretched-looking, sickly-looking cattle right behind him, and they devoured the fat ones. And it terrified him. He woke up. Then he had another dream with the ears of corn, with 7 good and then the 7 horrible looking, and they devoured the ones that were good. And he's trying to figure out what these dreams mean, and all of a sudden it clicks in the butler's mind. Wait a second, I know somebody who can help you. When I was in prison, Pharaoh, remember back, he said exactly what you were going to do 3 days before it happened. And so he says, get him here. So here comes Pharaoh, they clean them all up. Here comes Joseph now. They clean them all up, and he's standing before Pharaoh. Just hours ago, he's sitting in a prison with no hope. Just really is amazing what takes place right now. And what you see about Joseph, we looked at this in the Men of Faith too. I'm not going to go there right now. You see how the will of God finds you when you're humble before God and right before God. When you're not, you're in danger. Period. But when you're humble and you're right before God, the will of God finds you. And here he is. And he was ready. By the way, the key to him being ready, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, is because of the forgiveness that he had in his heart. It wasn't bitterness and anger right now. He comes through and Pharaoh tells him the dreams. He lets him know, listen, this is not of me, Pharaoh. The God is the one who's going to let me know what's going on here. And he tells him exactly what's going to take place. You've got 7 years of plenty right now. It's starting. He said, because you had the dreams twice, it means God's doing this now. It's taking place. All right? And then you're going to have 7 years of famine. But that isn't where had Joseph stopped right there. That's all he did, just interpret the dreams. I have no doubt he was released from prison, but he definitely is not prime minister of that country. He doesn't stop. He sees the door, what the Lord's doing right there, right now. And so what he does is he tells Pharaoh what to do. He says, Pharaoh, you need to look out a man. What you need to do right now, he tells him, you need to institute a 20% income tax, basically. He goes, what you got to do is you got to store up all that for those 7 years of lean. And you're going to be the distributor of this thing probably throughout the world. This is going to be massive. And Pharaoh is just stunned at the wisdom and the leadership of this man. And he says, does anybody here have any doubt as to the wisdom of this guy? And he goes, you're the man. It's you. And Pharaoh makes him prime minister. Years in a prison. And now, and no doubt with Joseph. And you see Joseph weeping over and over. I have no doubt after this he went and wept. It doesn't say that. I'll ask him when I get to heaven. Because you know what he realized? He saw what God was doing. He saw what God was doing. It all made sense to him now. And so, now, Joseph has now been in place for 2 years, where we pick up where we were reading. It's been 2 years that he has been in this position as prime minister. Now, Jacob has a problem. They're running out of food. And they hear what's going on in Egypt, so he sends his sons to go and buy food from Egypt. And so, all of them go with the exception of Benjamin. Benjamin was not going to leave Jacob's side. That was the only little bit of comfort he had since the death of Joseph. Benjamin heads out. The others head out with the exception of Benjamin. And as they come before the process there to get the food that they would need and pay for it, Joseph recognizes them. Those are my brothers. He sees them. They're there. And Joseph himself takes over now the process. And Joseph is getting ready to do a test here. Now remember, forgiveness has already taken part on Joseph's part. What he's getting ready to do is not to determine whether he would forgive or not, but it is going to determine his actions as to what's taking place. And so, his brothers come before him, and he lets them know, you're here to spy out the land. You're here to spy out this land. And he said, no, we're not. And they quickly tell him the story. Listen, we are a son, a man. We've had 12 brothers in our family. One is not. One is back home with dad. And he says, no, you're not. You're spies. You're here to spy out the land. And he actually puts him in prison for about 3 days. And he lets him know. He comes with his game plan. He said, what he's going to do is, he's going to keep one of them. He's going to keep one of them, and then you can go back. When you come back with that younger brother, I'll believe you. You told me the story. You got this one more brother at home. I'm going to verify that story. Let's see if you're telling me the truth. And now, what's amazing, what takes place right now is they have no idea who Joseph is. They start speaking Hebrew amongst themselves. Joseph obviously knows Hebrew. And he hears the repentance in their voice. You know what event they went back to? This is happening to us because of what we did to Joseph. It's coming back to us. Joseph has to leave and go cry. He has to head out. So he supplies him with plenty of food. And he actually sends him on their way. They head back and they let dad know. And now we're starting to see, he did not take Reuben. He took the second. I believe he didn't take Reuben because Reuben saved his life, by the way, back when he was a slave. And so he takes the next one, which would have been, who do you take? Simeon at that time. And so they go back, and now is when you see Judah beginning to assert a leadership role in the family. And so they head back to dad. Dad is crushed once again, especially when he hears that this prime minister wants Benjamin to come before him. He's like, no, that ain't happening. Benjamin's not leaving. I've already lost Joseph. I've lost another son now, and I'm not losing Benjamin. And the kids were pleading with him, Dad, we got to do this. Anyhow, the famine's getting worse, and Jacob knows he has to do something. And Judah, who's in the line of Christ, by the way, steps up and says, listen, you can take my kids in your place. We got to do this, Dad. This has to take place. And so Jacob agrees. Go back. Bring Benjamin with you. And Jacob used wisdom. He said, matter of fact, take double what you took just in case it was a mistake so you could pay back. He's trying to cover all his bases here. And they head back. Joseph, of course, sees him coming. And he has him brought in. I'm going to shorten it. He has him brought in. And it's interesting what Joseph does there. He basically invites him over to dinner all of a sudden. He invites him over to dinner, and he has all the plates. He has assigned seats for all of them, and he has assigned seats according to their age. Whew. Right down. All the way down. From Reuben down to Benjamin. And note, could you imagine him thinking, how in the world? How? What? Anyhow, he comes up with a plot. He's still trying him. He wants to see where their heart is, if they've changed. And so, when he sends them back, when he sends them, he starts to send them back, and what he did is he had a piece of property of his put into Benjamin's bag. And so they send after them right there, and they are, and the army catches up to them, and they say, listen, you've stolen from Joseph. He's done good unto you. You've stolen from him. And he says, no, we haven't. Listen, we haven't at all. You can search everything we have. They had no idea that Joseph had it put in Benjamin's bag. So they're going through. They get to Benjamin, and sure enough, there's the cup. They're like, no. And not Benjamin. I mean, any of the others, fine, but not Benjamin. So they're brought before Joseph. And then Joseph hears what he wanted to hear. They were not willing to sacrifice Benjamin. They would give their life before Benjamin for their dad. That's what he wanted to hear. And then, of course, as you go through it, he makes the decision to go ahead and reveal himself to his brothers. And what we read in Genesis chapter 45 was when he just revealed himself to the 11. And of course, they're just stunned. Oh. Look at Genesis chapter 45. Go back to Genesis chapter 45. Chapter 44 ends with them telling Joseph, please don't take Benjamin. Don't do that, you know. You have Judah speaking up in here, all this stuff. So anyhow, verse 1 of 45, then Joseph could not refrain himself before all of them that stood by him, and he cried, caused every man to go out from me, and there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud. And the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. Again, think where his brothers are witnessing right now. I'm Joseph. It's me. He's crying. And they're fearful right now. Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore, be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that you sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. These are the section verses that we read. For these 2 years, he explained of the famine. And then he asked about his dad around verse 9. Hey, go up to my father, let him know that I'm alive. I'm going to take care of you. You're going to bring everybody back here to Egypt. He gives them the plan. Verse 14. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck, and he wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren, and he wept upon them. And then my favorite part of this, of course, I love the weeping. I love Joseph's compassion in his heart. But just to know what took place here. And after that, his brethren talked with him. Well, what a conversation that would have been, huh? And so Joseph shows no ill will. They realize, at least that's what they think he's saying, that he has forgiven us. But they don't quite believe it. His brothers don't believe it. They don't believe anybody could possibly forgive like that for what they did. They remembered clearly his brother begging for his life while they're eating lunch. They know that Joseph heard them talking, how can we kill him? They remembered all the mockings they did. I mean, they understood Dad put him in that position. That's who put him there. And they were the ones who mocked. And you know, they knew how hard it was for Joseph growing up, because they made it that way. And so they remember when they sold him as a slave, all that's taking place. So they're still doubting if he's really forgiven. Look over in chapter 50. Dad has died. And so now they believe he's going to take vengeance now. Now that Dad is dead, that only reason he was showing patience with us and long-suffering and has not taken vengeance is because of Dad. But Dad's gone. And so look at verse 15 of Genesis chapter 50. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us You want to know why they think that? Because that's how they would respond. That is Romans 2:1. This is where miscommunications and problems come, because you think the other person will respond like you would respond. They were wrong. Do you understand that? They were wrong. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, "Joseph will peradventure hate us, and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him." And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, "Thy father did command before he died, saying, so shall you say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespasses of thy brethren and their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father." And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. So here comes, they send a servant, a messenger, to let Joseph know. Of course, they made it up. It wasn't true at all. Listen, here's Dad's last words. Don't kill the others. Forgive them of their trespass. I mean, that's what they thought was going to take place. And when Joseph sees this, he weeps. He was hurt because of really how little his own brothers even thought of him. They were questioning the very motives of what Joseph, of the kindness he's already showed. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face, Joseph's face. And they said, "Behold, we be thy servants." They're scared. And Joseph said unto them, "Fear not, for am I in the place of God?" Boy, we would do well to remember that. "But as for you, ye thought evil against me. But God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones, and be comforted them," and he spake kindly unto them. Joseph is letting know, listen, the forgiveness has already happened. There's no need for this. Have you not seen how I have acted toward my manner towards you since you have returned? The forgiveness is past, I've done it. And so how was it that Joseph was able to take these people who he was abused by his brothers, he was hated by his brothers, he was mocked by his brothers, he was beaten by his brothers, they tried to kill him, and he was sold as a slave by his brothers. How is it that he can forgive so easily? This is the key to forgiveness, the first point. He forgave his brothers because of his theology. Because of what he believed about God. That was the key to forgiveness. It's what he believed about God. His theology was the reason why. You have heard me say over and over and over, what you believe about God and how you view God affects how you serve God. Listen, it's easy to say we believe in the sovereignty of God. But it's another thing when you have to practice it in your life. It's another thing when you have a child who is sick and you still have to trust in the sovereignty of God. It's another thing when you're facing battles in your life and you still have to trust in the sovereignty of God. It's so important that we learn of Him. That you don't use church services as vanity. It's more than the social aspect that's here. Listen, we need the fellowship, and that's great, and that's good, and it's going to strengthen us, it's going to help us. But, man, please understand what's taking place from the pulpit, service after service. It's to give us instruction, it's to encourage, it's to reprove, it's to rebuke, it's to increase our knowledge of God. Because the more we learn of Him, the more we know how to respond in the right way. A key to being able to forgive is tied to what you believe about God. What Joseph knew was God was in control. Joseph did not forgive his brothers because that was his personality or because he had a big heart. He sat in a prison for a crime he didn't commit. He was sold by a slave who brothers wanted to kill him. And yet he was able to maintain a peace of mind and a rightness. And what drove that was knowing God was in control. That's what drove it. Remember what he told his brothers both occasions. For time's sake, I'm not going there. Chapter 45 and chapter 50, both occasions. He used, in the one section, he used this wording, "You meant it unto evil, but God meant it unto good." God took the evil that they did, the evil that was taking place, and he recognized God's ability to turn that thing around, which is exactly what God did. He did not let it turn to bitterness. This was a man who had much evil done unto him, and this is a man who, you know, I'm sure he had sin, but as far as we know, there's no wrong mentioned in his life. It's only true of, what, two men in the Bible? I can think of right now, I think it's just two men in the Bible, outside of Christ. He trusted in God's sovereignty. He knew the Lord had a purpose behind all that was happening to him, and this was key to his ability to forgive. He knew God could take their evil and use it for something good. Again, we all know, many of us here, I'm sure, know the verse of Romans 8:28. But we know that all things work together for good. All things. If you're having trouble getting over a past wrong done unto you and not able to forgive, the key goes back to your theology. It goes back to trust in God. Now, what happens if Joseph does not forgive? How different does this story look if Joseph chooses not to forgive? One, he's out of the will of God. It's done. If he, while he's in that cage on his way to Egypt, and he lets bitterness and anger take over, do you think that Potiphar would recognize the Spirit of God in him when he arrives at that house? And we can put it at any point in this. When he's in prison, if all of a sudden he gets mad and angry at God, and I'm sitting here in a prison, God, I've done nothing but serve you, I've stayed faithful all these years, and now I'm sitting in a stinking prison, and all of a sudden the butler and the baker get thrown in the prison, and he knows the dreams, and he knows the gifts that God has given. He says, no, I'm done with that. It's gotten me nowhere. See, that anger and that bitterness will take you right out of the will of God. Anger will begin to fester. When you find an angry person, you have found a person that struggles with forgiveness. When you find an angry person, you find a person who struggles with forgiveness. Many times wives and children have to put up with an angry husband or a dad. A lot of times that anger, again, is tied into forgiveness. Anger is something that will eat at you. It changes how you view life. Anger not dealt with begins to turn to bitterness. Bitterness not dealt with will turn to wrath. When anger begins to turn to bitterness, it's dangerous, dangerous ground. When you make the decision not to deal with the anger. See, here's a problem that we all need to recognize right now. Your flesh likes anger. Do you understand that? Your flesh likes it. It wants to hold on to it. It doesn't want to let it go. If it's not, you open yourself up to a poison, just as much as drinking some nasty poison. And that poison is going to lead to bitterness. Bitterness is a horrible place to live. Bitterness now, anger will occupy a lot of your time and thoughts, but bitterness wants to take it all over. It wants to occupy all your thoughts. You now view everything. Just like I put on glasses so I can see better. It's just like putting on glasses when you have bitterness. That you see everything through your bitter perspective. It's the only way you can view it. It's the only way you can view it. Bitterness, according to Romans chapter 3, verse 14, it affects your speech. Bitterness will trouble you and defile you. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 15. I remember I had an aunt who had great wrong done to her. And she was not a Christian, never to get saved, actually got to a point because of the events in her life where hated God, would mock him. She went through, and I agree, what happened to her was just, she was married to my uncle. the uncle had left her for another woman, much younger, much prettier. And then on top of everything, they were Catholic, and they were a strong Catholic. You're not allowed to get divorced and remarried in the Catholic Church. But he was one of the most wealthy men in Cleveland, Ohio. Real estate, his all law practice, that was his. Somehow, after 10 years of marriage, the church decided to annul his marriage so he could get remarried in the Catholic Church. After 10 years and 2 kids of marriage, they annulled it. Well, that sent her over the edge. The bitterness never left till she died. Never left. What she didn't understand was the anger and the bitterness never hurt my uncle. It simply destroyed her life. When bitterness sets in, you begin to seek ways to plot your revenge and your vengeance, to try and justify a wrong that you believe has been done. Had Joseph not been willing to forgive, he would have sought for vengeance against his brothers. He would have sought for vengeance against them. He would have took them and just strung them up. Had he been bitter over this and says, now, kind of like Saul as we're going through this, which town was it that came to Saul and said, hey, we got David. And he said, oh, blessed be the Lord. And that's what Joseph would have did. Had anger and bitterness took over, when he saw his brethren coming, he says, wow, God has delivered you into my hands. And he would have took revenge. And of course, that would have destroyed the will of God for his life. Another thing that takes place. Listen, we're getting into anger and bitterness. Forgiveness is essential in the Christian life. It's essential. You know what else begins to take place because of an unforgiving spirit? Is divorce. Divorce. Of course, that's true with marriages. The inability to forgive the other. But we're not just dealing with marriage. We're dealing with divorce in the sense of marriage, yes. But also between parents and children. Between friends. It leads to that division where the fellowship is broken. It leads to divorce in relationships. Unforgiveness is one of the greatest things at destroying relationships. Now, to finish up here, I want to give some truths out in understanding forgiveness. All right? We are all sinful people. Understand that. Anybody here without sin? I mean, Brother Stolbach's about the only guy I know. I think he's the only sinless person that I've met here. And, wow, his children look right at him. They know that's not true. Wow. Well, you got that wrong. Think about that for a second. If we all have sin, that means all of us need forgiveness. All of us. You cannot have right relationships without forgiveness because we're in a sinful world. You can't. It's not possible. You can't have right relationships without forgiveness. Husband, understand your wife isn't perfect. She's going to make mistakes. Wife, understand the husband is not perfect. He's going to make mistakes. If you put a limit on your forgiveness, you're setting yourself up for failure. Because I know this. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have my sinful flesh until I die. Pretty certain of that. I mean, at times I wake up and I think, hey, I'm all right. And then I take another breath. Nope, I'm not. Still there. You see, don't be a hypocrite because you also need forgiveness. You also need it. Don't be like the man in the story where Jesus told who was forgiven his debt, but then went out onto another man and absolutely showed no mercy. And he was forgiven a great debt. But then he went out and just amazing what he did there. Now, let me cover this too. Forgiveness does not mean this. Please understand this. It does not mean you forget what happened. You're lying to yourself if you believe that can take place. And if you're waiting for that time to come for forgiveness to somehow to develop, you're not understanding how forgiveness works, and forgiveness will greatly lack in your life. It'll never be a strong area of your life. It doesn't mean you forget. Joseph knew what happened. He referred to it over and over. He said, listen, I recognize. He didn't excuse it before them. He said, you did evil against me. I know that. You plotted to kill me. You sold me as a slave. He didn't forget what happened, and that's what led to his forgiveness. It doesn't mean, again, that all of a sudden it's out of your mind. It is choosing to see God in the situation. It's choosing to recognize the fact that Christ has forgiven us. That I'm not perfect. That I'm going to let this go. Because it's important for me to maintain my relationship before God and my relationship before others. It's kind of like we talked on Wednesday night in James. You've got to change your perspective on the situation. When you get to that point, that's when you're beginning to understand forgiveness. It's not when the thing just disappears out of your mind. It doesn't take place. It's choosing to show grace instead of revenge. Grace, it's scary to me. If I was to go across, I would not do that. I remember in New Guinea, and it was even in the Bible college. And I had about 15 students in the Bible college. And just out of the blue, I asked each one of them to write down the definition of grace. I don't think one had it right. Of course, it hurt me. I'm the instructor. I'm the guy who's been teaching. But I wonder if we went through here and we asked for the definition of grace, what different answers we would hear. You know what it means? It means unmerited favor. It means that you show favor or a right attitude towards somebody, even if they don't deserve it. Even if they don't deserve it. You show grace instead of revenge. That's what you do. You show grace instead of revenge. It's choosing grace. Forgiveness is a necessary human virtue. Now, how do we forgive those who don't ask for forgiveness? How do you forgive those who don't even recognize they're doing wrong? How in the world does that take place? Well, we have scriptural examples of it. Your need to forgive is not based on them asking for forgiveness. Understand that. Joseph forgave his brothers before they ever asked for forgiveness. That was done. Had he waited till then, he never would have found the will of God. It would not have found him. He forgave as soon as it began creeping up into his heart and realized God was in control. Because he understood he needed forgiveness for him to be right with God if he could stay in the will of God. And so how do we forgive those haven't asked for forgiveness or don't even know they've done you wrong? One of the greatest examples we have is the Lord Jesus Christ. He's being nailed to a cross. Did the soldier ask for forgiveness? He did not. You know what he said? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's still possible, even if they don't forgive. What you do is you make the choice to let go of the anger and the hurt and to show grace. It certainly isn't easy. But I'll tell you what, that road is a whole lot easier road than the road that bitterness will put you on. And again, we have the awesome example of Jesus Christ. It's making that choice. You say, I don't have the strength to make that choice. I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think it's easy. I'm not staying up here. I don't think it's easy. All right? We all have, we're all of the same flesh here. Okay? I am 47 years old. I know what it's like when I have wrong done unto me. It's when the anger comes up, it's who you yield to in your life. Do you understand that? Doesn't mean at times that if I dwell on stuff long enough, I can get really angry about it. It's recognizing that when I begin to dwell on something, I have to stop. You make the choice of what you're meditating upon. And as we're going to see when we get to James, it's all going to start in your meditation. It's all going to start in your mind. As part of this, let me finish up just one more thing I want to cover here. And not a point, still just a sub point with this as we're learning lessons on forgiveness. And I've been trying to establish why we forgive. All right? The ability to forgive is directly tied to your theology, to what you believe about God. The closer your walk with Him, all right, the more easier it is for you to forgive. Because when you're close to Him, that's when you can trust in His sovereignty, that He's in control, that He's going to take care of you, that He can see you through this. It doesn't alleviate the situation. But it's where you trust that God is there. Where He says, no, remember what He told the disciples when He's leaving? They've given their life up for Him for 3 years. Now Christ says He's going. He says, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in Me. In My Father's house are many mansions. Remember, that's all I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go, I will come again and receive you unto Myself. But when He started that, He gave the key. Let not your heart be troubled. The next couple of words was it. You believe in God. You believe in God. It's choosing to take self out of the way and to allow God to have control. It's choosing to deny your flesh the desire it wants to lash out, to be angry, and to take vengeance. It's choosing grace. It's choosing to forgive. And that road is so much better than the road of bitterness. We forgive too because Christ has forgiven us, Ephesians 4:32. How dare we hold on to the sins when we look at all that Christ has forgiven me? I remind myself often when it comes to forgiveness of my own wickedness when I'm having trouble forgiving others. And knowing that Christ has forgiven me of all my trespasses. I want to forgive because it frees me from the sin of bitterness. And lastly, I need forgiveness. It needs to be placed in my life because it frees me. This is important. It frees me from being in a place where the devil can manipulate me. You allow bitterness to come in. You open yourself up to manipulation now. You open the door to allow him to cause great destruction. I was telling, and I refer to it here many times in the church, I was telling the Kecks last night, we were over at the house for dinner yesterday afternoon, and about the murders that had taken place. What I was witnessing take place there over time and doing, realizing violence was coming and trying to make amends of this thing because I saw the manipulation that was taking place. You know why the manipulation was able to take place? Because anger and bitterness had set in. It had set in. Forgiveness is an essential part to the Christian life. It's key to your marriage. It's key to the relationship with your children. It's key for our church. If we're going to be effective here in our community, understand the biggest trials we're going to face are not those from without. They're those from within. And forgiveness is key. It is key. What we understand is God is in control. And I'm going to stay right with Him and allow grace to guide instead of my flesh. With every head bowed and every eye closed.